This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cunnan in Washington. Every summer these days, animated movies arrive at the local Octoplex, designed not just for kids, but for the parents that pay their way in and buy the popcorn. Coming soon, Despicable Me 2 and Monsters University. Last year, Brave was the film to see.
I am Merida, firstborn descendant of Clan Dunbrog. And I'll be shooting for my own hand.
Brave's story creator, Brenda Chapman, started to develop her headstrong heroine nearly 10 years ago with a new fairy tale to match. From sketch to story to screen, it took many, many hands to create the movie. If you've worked on an animated film, tell us, what's the most interesting part of this complicated business? 800-989-8255 is the phone number. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, NPR's favorite film buff, Maury Horowitz, with the best robot movies of all time. You can email us your nominations now, talk@npr.org. But first, Brenda Chapman was Pixar's first female director for the movie Brave. She was also the first female head of story for Disney's The Lion King and helped launch DreamWorks. She joins us now via Skype from DreamWorks Studios. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
So walk us through the character development of Merida.
she initially came through when I was just discovering my daughter was a very strong-willed little girl at about 4 or 5 years old. I was just sort of astonished at, I thought I was supposed to get that kind of behavior when she became a teenager, not so young. So Merida sort of grew out of that astonishment, and my daughter became the inspiration for her character as to what would she be like as a teenager, and thus Merida came by.
Did she have vivid red hair and a Scots accent?
No. No, my daughter's a blonde, and she lives in Northern California, so the Scottish part came from the story of Brave came out of three of my loves, mainly my daughter, my love of fairy tales, and my love of Scotland. It's part of my heritage. I'm the great American mutt. I have many different ancestry, but the Scottish gene sort of cried out in me. So that's, I wanted to set a fairy tale in a world that was fresh, that hadn't really been utilized in animation, as well as give a story that a modern audience could relate to, especially working mothers and their daughters.
How many different characterizations, drawings, were there before you arrived at the character we saw in the movie?
Not many. She came to be very early on in the process. I knew she was going to have red hair because of Scotland, but I also knew that I wanted her to have a more stout, athletic figure as opposed to the really skinny supermodel approach that had seemed to be the norm before. So in speaking to my character designers and my production designer and even my head of story at the time, Steve Purcell, they were all drawing her very similarly.
Hmm. It's interesting you mentioned that supermodel look. Disney recently rebranded Merida, looking a little more like a supermodel.
Yeah, that was a pretty big disappointment for me. And I was kind of not surprised, but astounded at the same time.
They own her, you don't.
Exactly.
And that must be some, she's your creation.
Yeah, that's the way the studios work in Hollywood. You work for them, they own whatever you come up with, and you have basically no rights to what they do with it.
Now, by the time you were doing Brave, it's a long way from what you did on Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes. I was just a cleanup artist on Roger Rabbit. I had nothing to do
explain
with Jessica.
What a cleanup artist does.
A cleanup artist is someone who comes in after the animator has done the rough animation. When an animator draws in traditional, it's a really rough sketch. And then a cleanup artist has to take that and do a really clean line to make the character look exactly the same from frame to frame and throughout the film.
So it's the it's the animated version of continuity.
Yes.
And it's tedious work.
I found it so. That's why I love stories so much. But but you have to have an incredible talent and draftsmanship to be able to do that. And I have a huge respect for the artists who do that job. They get the short end of the stick a lot, you know, but they are incredibly talented people.
And I understand that when you were doing a cleanup, that was what female animators mostly did in the business.
Yes. Before, you know, in the old days of Walt, there were advertisements for animators, and in the fine print it said, "Women need not apply." So, and when I applied to CalArts, I was told that the only way I would get in was through cleanup, where the guys were told they could put in animation portfolios, which is you know, sort of the actor part of the thing. But I was fortunate enough to hit the time in the late 80s where Disney was getting a little scrutiny for not having any women in their creative pool. They had a couple of female animators, Kathy Zielinski and a couple of others. But I was hired as a story trainee because they saw my student film and my story reel. So they decided to give me a shot because I was the right price. I was a trainee and fresh out of school.
You're the right price. Brendan Chapman mentioned CalArts. That's the California Institute of Arts. And Daniel Hansen teaches there. He's co-director of the program in character animation. He started working at Disney in 1975, where he was a layout artist, artistic coordinator, and art director. His work is included in movies like Aladdin, Pocahontas, The Emperor's New Groove. And he joins us now from his studio in Sherman Oaks, California. And it's good of you to be with us today.
Oh, thanks, Neil. Glad to be here.
And Brenda was also talking about some of the old days at Disney. You go back that far to the nine old men.
I do. As a matter of fact, you know, when I started, Wooly Reitherman was still there. Milt Call, Frank Thomas, Ollie Johnston, John Lounsbery, Ken Anderson. They were all still there. And the only three people who I believe had retired at that time. Well, Ward Kimball had retired. Les Clark had retired. Mark Davis, I believe, was working at what is now called Imagineering. He was designing like the characters from Pirates of the Caribbean.
And they go back, of course, to the days where animated films were made from hand-painted cells, each motion a different cell. And this is something that, eventually led to the craft almost disappearing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the person that I worked really closely with was Don Griffith, and Don had started there as an artist. He was self-taught, and he started there, I believe it was in 1938. And but yeah, you're absolutely right. It was all, I mean, everything was hand-done at that time.
Technology came in. Computers allowed you to do many new and different things. And, of course, a lot of people grumbled it was going to be a travesty.
No, it did. I mean, that was the talk. But, you know, something, I mean, it was like an amazing opportunity. You know, we were, the really exciting thing is for us is that we were kind of on that cusp, you know, and learning what the new equipment would do and what we could, you know, how amazing we could make it. I mean, it was really kind of a phenomenal opportunity.
And Brenda Chapman, I wanted to bring you back in here. While it is amazing what the technology will enable you to do now, it is, of course, paramount, not to mention another studio, but paramount, that the story and the characters be there to bring the film to life.
Absolutely. There's a saying that the worst animation in the world won't kill a good story, but the best animation in the world can't save a bad story. So story is absolutely the first thing that we have to make sure is top quality.
And in a world where there is so much, these are big corporations, it's everybody's decision, there's committees, who decides?
It's different everywhere. I mean, of course, it's a business, so the people running the company does have the final say. It just really depends on your the studio and who the director is and how, you know, they are respected. It's a collaboration. So you get a lot of input from a lot of different people. And I think the director's job is to try to make sure that it all fits together in one vision.
But who gets to say, of all the projects that have been proposed, this is the one that goes?
That would be the heads of the studios, the heads of development and the studio.
And Daniel Hansen, that is where a lot of good projects go to die.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. In fact, I worked on Black Cauldron, which was like a really painful picture, and I wish it had died before it ever saw the light of day. But and it was really unfortunate too, because the books were great, the pre-production artwork was great. I mean, it really looked like it was going to be an amazing picture, and it unfortunately turned out to be a really awful picture.
And as you look back at the process, was there a moment where somebody could have said, wait a minute, we've got to go back to square one or start something else?
Yeah, absolutely. No, there would absolutely have been the time. And I don't know if they weren't focusing on it, if they were looking at something else. I don't know. But that was really unfortunate.
If you've worked on an animated film, good or bad, call, tell us about the most interesting part of this complicated business, 800-989-8255. Zap us an email, talk@npr.org. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. Disney has always been known for its animated features, especially films based on familiar stories. The Jungle Book, Snow White. But in 1989, after decades in production, The Little Mermaid hit movie theaters, and Ariel, Ursula the Villainous Octopus, Flounder, and Sebastian the Caribbean Crab became household names. Here, after rescuing Prince Eric from the wreckage of his ship, Ariel vows to become part of, well, you know the story.
I don't know where.
Can't talk over the shimmering violins. Brenda Chapman, known for being the initial director of Brave, was responsible for that iconic splash. Dan Hansen was also on the Little Mermaid team, one of many working to bring animated films to the big screen. If that includes you, if you've worked on an animated picture, we'd like to hear from you. What was the most interesting part? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can chime in on our website as well. Go to npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. This email from Susan in Nevada City. I used to work in post-production sound. It was always fun to create the entire soundscape of an animated film from nothing. Lots of opportunities for great sound design. Brenda Chapman, I wonder if you had a thought about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is sort of the magic of an animated film, is you start with nothing. Where in live action, you have, you know, a camera is pointed at something that already exists, and the sound is already there, the voice is already there. But with animation, everything is a clean slate, so it's an incredibly creative experience.
And the voices, of course, are real. They are not synthesized. Daniel Hansen, casting those voices has become, well, an industry in and of itself.
Yeah. I mean, casting is really an important thing. As a matter of fact, you were just playing something from Little Mermaid, and I remember when Howard Ashman was he wasn't the composer, but he was the lyricist, and he wanted to do that song where what's it called? Under the Sea.
Under the Sea.
He wanted to do that song, and he knew it. He wanted to do this Calypso song, and so he's the one that suggested to the directors that the voice of Sebastian the crab be Calypso Jamaican, and that's how that came to be. Because otherwise,
the song doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, exactly.
Didn't explain how. There's other things that happen in these films. Let's go to Zach. Zach's with us from Owensboro in Kentucky.
Hey guys, fascinating subject. I'm really excited to hear about this. I'm currently working on. It's me and a group of friends working on a YouTube show. I'm planning to run it, for at least 2 seasons. And being animators and stuff, we're wondering, what y'all would think would be better in the long term, because I'm a huge fan of, the hand-drawn method. I think it looks better, but the CGI, it can look, I don't know, I'm really conflicted on which one I should choose, being that I'm doing most of the voiceovers and I've got to, kind of put my voices with these characters, whether they be hand-drawn or CGI. What would y'all think would have more appeal today, as far as, the difference between hand-drawn and CGI?
I can tell you that golden-throated radio announcers are available at very reasonable prices.
Yes, indeed.
Daniel, you teach people who I assume have the same quandary. What might you advise?
Yeah, truly. I mean, I think the important thing right now, just because of the way the animation industry is, be thinking CG. Because literally that is where the industry is. I mean, Disney even just had a big layoff a few weeks ago where they were laying off basically 2D animators. So, but they kept on, people who are working on CG films. So anyway, I think that's something to take into consideration.
CG, of course, computer generated.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes.
No, that's okay. Zach, go ahead. Brenda Chapman.
But I'll throw another angle at that. Since you're doing it on YouTube and it's your piece, you should go, I think, with what supports the story and what works best for the storytelling. So,
that's absolutely true.
CG is definitely the most popular thing right now. But I also think shows like The Simpsons and Rugrats and those kind of things that have been very popular are traditionally done as well. So it's not, you're not making a big budget film. So I think your playing field is a little broader.
Right.
Yeah. No. Even the students right now at CalArts, I mean, we end up with, I don't know, maybe 120, 130 films every year, animated films every year. And,
right.
Probably, I don't even know, 110 of them are in 2D, hand-drawn. Maybe, 10 or 15 are done in CG, computer graphics.
Right.
Well, Zach, good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate the call. Let's go next to, this is Laura, and Laura with us from Austin, Texas.
Hi there. I don't work in the industry, but my mother was involved in one of these productions, and I have a wonderful treasure from that. The Fleischer Studios did an animated Gulliver's Travels in 1936.
Oh,
and
wow.
My mother, Lavonia Warren, was the human model for all the drawings for the cells. And I don't own any of the cells, but she saved many things from that production. And one of the things that is my biggest treasure framed is a watercolor that was done by the 7 animators. And it's my mother dressed as Princess Glory, and she's standing on a box of cartons that I suppose they use to resemble the mountain, and they've all autographed it. And then as sort of a little joking reference to the Disney studios, they said, to Lavonia with love from the 7 jerks. And one last quick comment, and that is, she's gone now, but her younger brother, who's now 90, my uncle, had said to me several years ago, he said, there's a moment where she, where Princess Glory comes down a long staircase, and he said, you know, I look at that and I can see Livonia coming down that staircase.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Laura, that's a great piece of family memorabilia, and I assume it's probably worth a bit of money, but I assume it's going nowhere.
That's right.
Thanks.
Yeah, I would hope that eventually there will be a like an animation museum. I mean, right now the only one that I know of is up in San Francisco, and I believe that's a Disney animation museum. But I would love to see something like that. You know, like what you're talking about. Go into an animation museum. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Let's go next to Jai, and Jai's with us from Louisville.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. My dad is actually an animator that probably Brendan might even know, Ron Husband.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I'm actually working in my own studio now, and we're doing some animation work. And last year, we Gyration Joint Production, we received a NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Children's Program for my animated feature film, Kasha and the Zulu King, that came on, that premiered on BET last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I identified with Brenda when she talked about designing Meredith because I specifically wanted to have a full-figure heroine, and we got a lot of pushback from the network from that. It was really difficult, and we went through several iterations of, like, submitting her and just making her just a little bit thinner each time, but really trying to keep that, and they were just, you know, there are issues that they were talking about as far as not wanting to glorify, you know, an unhealthy lifestyle, whatever. But because our film was set in South Africa, we wanted to sort of represent sort of more a different aesthetic of, you know, a beauty and whatnot. And so we wanted our princess, our heroine, to be full figured, and it was such a huge ordeal that I definitely identified with Brenda when she talked about the sort of the struggle and the fight to keep Meredith, you know, sort of that stockier build.
Yeah. That character design, we heard a little bit about that from Brenda Chapman. Daniel Hansen, you've been involved in this too.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Jai, I met you several years ago, you know, when you were working at Disney for whatever it was, 6 months.
Oh, right.
I met you, and yeah, I mean, I think that, I completely agree with you. You know, it's like Pocahontas. You know, Pocahontas was, if you look at the real story, you know, she was, what, 13? You know,
yeah.
And when we made the film, you know, she became this, you know, 20-something, you know, big buxom, you know, beautiful figure. And in reality, well, you know, that wasn't the case. Hmm. And I'm sure that the situation with, with Brave, with gosh, who's the character?
Merida.
Yes. You know, and I'm sure that absolutely drove you crazy, Brenda, because, you know, yeah, that was a story about your daughter, basically.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, for the film, I was able to, you know, design her the way I wanted to. You know, I had to thin the mother down a little bit more than I wanted to, but Merida, I managed to maintain, but it was what they did to her afterwards that drove mm-hmm. me crazy. Mm-hmm.
Jai, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Jai.
Been talking a little bit about that fairy tale princess formula and variations from it. Well, The Lion King was a complete departure. Let's listen to a scene where Nathan Lane's Timon executes a diversion with his co-conspirator Pumbaa.
Hyenas.
I hate hyenas.
So what's your plan for getting past those guys?
Live bait.
Good idea.
Hey.
Come on, Timon. You guys have to create a diversion.
What do you want me to do? Dress and drag and do the hula?
Wow! If you're hungry for a hunk of fat and juicy meat, eat my buddy Pumbaa here, because he has a treat. Coming down a dine on a spacey swine. All you have to do is get in line. Ah, you aching?
Yup.
Oh, some bacon.
Yup.
He's a big pig.
Yup.
You can be a big pig, too.
Brenda, we've been talking about story development. On that picture, you had an uncredited ghostwriter fellow by the name of Shakespeare.
Yeah. A little bit of Hamlet in there, but not in that scene.
Not in that scene, no. I don't think he would take any credit for that. You get these characters, like Nathan Lane, and don't they drive their parts in ways that the original story artist had not thought?
Yes, they do. They add to the characters tremendously, and many times once they come on, we'll go back in and reboard what we think would fit what they're doing better. But in this case, we were pretty close to what Nathan was doing with it. We had two writers, Jonathan Roberts and Irene Mecki, and then a story artist, Barry Johnson. And it was Barry and Irene that really found Timon and Pumbaa and who those characters were. And then when Nathan came on, he just, you know, literally made them sing.
Then there was a character who I think literally wrote large parts of his own script. This was the Disney Renaissance favorite, the 1992 comedy musical Aladdin, with a fellow named Robin Williams.
Almost. There are a few provisos, a couple of quid pro quos.
Like?
Rule number one,
I can't kill anybody.
Yeah, so don't ask.
Rule number two,
I can't make anybody fall in love with anybody else. You little punim there.
Rule number three,
I can't bring people back from the dead. It's not a pretty picture. I don't like doing it.
Other than that,
you got it.
Daniel Hanson.
Yeah, sorry to step on Robin Williams. But all I was going to say is that the, basically the directors would turn him loose. That, you know, they would say, you know, yeah, you're going to start here and you're basically talking about this. And then they would just kind of let him go. And they would come back with, you know, 3 or 4 hours each time. I mean, they would come back with 3 or 4 hours of him ad-libbing. And then they'd go through and say, you know, something, we like this, we like this, we hate this and this and this, you know, but this is brilliant.
We're talking about animation with Daniel Hanson. He started working for Disney in 1975, and he's now with us from Sherman Oaks, California. And he's at the California Institute of Arts, co-director of the program in character animation there. Brenda Chapin's also with us. She is now at DreamWorks, Pixar's first female director for the film Brave, and the first female head of story for The Lion King. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. John's on the line with us from Tucson.
Good afternoon. My question is about the stories that died somewhere in the gentleman's experience, you know, that they didn't pass the executives and so on's decision. Mm-hmm. What is it about a story that makes it, you know, what are the qualities of a story that really makes it work? You know, what were the things about The Black Cauldron that made it not work? And, you know, is it, I mean, I heard them say that you know, the if the story's not good, it doesn't matter really what, whether you've got good production or bad production, the film will just not go. I'd like to know, what is it that makes a good story?
Yeah, really. If we knew that, I suppose we would all be millionaires. But you know, Brenda's 100% right about that. The story is everything. You know, and you need a character that is that the audience can connect with. You need a character, ideally, that, you know, that grows throughout the. And I mean, you know, his personality, what the character is learning. There may have been something that, you know, he did very early in the film that he got smarter as the film goes on, and so, you know, he's able to solve the problem or get rid of the villain or whatever it is. I mean, I think that you know, Brenda's 100% right though, that story is everything.
Brenda, what are you working on now?
I can't really tell you, but I'm developing a project at DreamWorks. It's based right now. The one I'm working on is based on a children's book that I think is incredibly funny and has a lot of heart. And that's about all I could tell you.
Let's get one last caller in. Scott in Emeryville. We have about 40 seconds left.
Hey, my name's Scott Clark. I'm an animator at Pixar here, and I appreciate the show today. I just wanted to make a comment on why I chose to be an animator, and it's interesting. I started out as a drawn animator in college, and I feel like there's a lot of, because of computers, people trying to make things look real and realistic, and I love that in animation we can caricature things and we can kind of get to the essence of a personality or an emotion in a way that maybe Al Hirschfield did in a drawing, that you say, hey, that is more like that person than they are in real life. And
Scott, thanks very much for the point. I'm sorry we didn't have a longer time to hear it, but we appreciate the phone call. And I'd like to thank our guests, Brenda Chapman, who joined us from DreamWorks Animation Studios, and Daniel Hansen in Sherman Oaks, California. We appreciate their time. When we come back, our favorite film buff, Murray Horwitz, and your favorite robot movies. You can send us your nominations, talk@npr.org. Give us a call, 800-989-8255.
I'll be back.
I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.